Hi, this is Jerry DiPiano, and you are listening to the Love Mia Vita podcast. Today's guest is Dr. Alexandra Bertucci, and she is a pelvic floor physical therapist. And today, Dr. Bertucci and I are going to discuss the symptoms of overactive bladder, stress incontinence, and mixed incontinence, and how pelvic floor PT may be an opportunity to help to solve those problems. But first, Dr. Bertucci, Alexandra, perhaps you'd like to share with our guests a little bit about your background.
Yeah, sure. So I've been a pelvic floor physical therapist for, I have to count the years really quick, a little over 5 years. Probably a little over six. Right out of school, I really thought I wanted to get into rehab for like acute neuro injuries. So I loved spinal cord injury, I loved stroke and all of that stuff. And, you know, there was just this common theme among those patients, especially the female patients. And they're like, what about all this bowel and bladder stuff? So that was, you know, then it was kind of like, that wasn't like a part of the neuro rehab. And, you know, I'm not really in that world anymore, but just over the, you know, short time that I've been practicing, I feel like so much has changed with pelvic floor. And kind of from that point on, I got into pelvic floor and I was able to start somewhere where I had mentorship and took a lot of courses. And I've kind of worked all over since then, but since changed post COVID. But yeah, that's kind of how I got here. And yeah, I love it. And it's been a journey seeing, like, you know, women in my life go through pregnancy and me going through my own pregnancy, and you know, women in my life going through menopause and perimenopause and all those things. So it's just really, even, you know, having a toddler and like potty training, it really is like, you know, lifespan stuff we're talking about for women. So
Alexandra can relate to a lot of what you listeners are dealing with or have dealt with going through your life transitions. And there's really so much that can be shared regarding pelvic floor physical therapy. And it is a special science. One must receive certification, and there are certifying bodies. So if you're wondering whether pelvic PT is right for you, the first question to ask is, what are the certifications of the person that you're going to be seeing? Because although physical therapy requires licensure and it also requires specific educational program, pelvic PT is even more specialized in terms of the way in which we think about women's pelvic floor, men's pelvic floor, and how that manifests itself and how it can actually be ameliorated with the appropriate practitioner intervention. So just by way of introduction, and you heard Alexandra nerd out on things that she loves. And for those of us that have been in science and medicine, it's important that you are passionate about what you do, because it is challenging when you're dealing with individuals who are experiencing some of what Alexandra and I are going to discuss today. So we're going to spend a little time on bladder issues, bowel and bladder issues. And I know that for those of you listening, you could probably relate to times when you've coughed or sneezed and, you know, maybe you've had a little bladder leakage, maybe you've completely wet your pants, which is an embarrassing situation, but it also can be distressing for lots of other reasons. Or perhaps you've had a situation where you just feel the need to go, go, go. And so we want to be sure that we distinguish the different types of what we'll refer to as incontinence, because they are not the same. And there are different ways in which to address the different forms of incontinence. So we have the overactive bladder, which is, I have to go, go, go. And then we have stress incontinence, which has really manifested itself primarily with incontinence episodes where you wet your pants. You just cannot control your bladder and you wet your pants. And then there's mixed incontinence, which has features of both. So you may have to go, go, go. You may have some incontinence episodes. So we're going to unpack that a little bit for you. And so, Alexandra, let's talk about the different types of what I'll call incontinence in general. And it's really not incontinence. These are bladder issues. But let's talk a little bit about that and how the pelvic floor is implicated in this, of course, and what can be done.
Yeah. So I guess starting with like the three kind of divisions of the incontinence diagnoses, I think that's like the easiest place to start. So like you said, we have types of urinary incontinence. We have stress incontinence, what's called urge incontinence, and then mixed incontinence, which is a combination of both. So stress incontinence is going to be incontinence with things like exercise, coughing, sneezing, and, you know, it can be variable amounts, but there's always some type of precipitating factor, usually where there's what's called an increase in intra-abdominal pressure. So you do a jumping jack, or you cough really hard, or you go into a sneezing fit. And there can be variable amounts of leakage that are happening. In my experience, this is the type of person who has like, just notices like dribbles. You know what I mean? Like, oh, I just like leaked a little bit when I coughed or when I sneezed. And again, the amounts can vary, but that's typically what I see in those diagnoses. And those are, you know, probably that specifically, stress incontinence is probably one of the most common things that we see in the postpartum population, especially following a vaginal birth. And it does, in a lot of people tend to persist kind of through the, you know, 30s, 40s, 50s into peri and postmenopause. So that's stress incontinence. The urge incontinence is more related to, like having the urge to go to the bathroom. So you get the urge to go, and, you know, maybe over time this urge has started to feel like stronger and stronger and stronger and stronger, and it gets harder to control. And on the way to the bathroom, you're leaking, or when before you get your pants all the way down at the toilet, or when you just get into the bathroom, or when you get home from work, that urge gets really bad. So there's kind of two components of that. One is the urgency, and then the other is the leaking that comes from it. So that is, that urgency is a component of an overactive bladder diagnosis typically, while it can progress to urge incontinence, which can be, you know, more of those like big gushes and like, oh, I totally just like lost full control of my bladder. So that's kind of the next one. And then mixed incontinence would be sort of a combination of both, of you have instances of both, and you're kind of meeting criteria for both of those diagnoses.
Now, we understand that there are different ways in which to address these types of problems. There's pharmacology. And pharmacology sometimes works, many times does not work, and lots of times it causes other adverse events or side effects, maybe not serious, but dry mouth and constipation are features of many of the pharmacologic interventions that are recommended. And unfortunately, that presents a whole host of other issues and feels very cyclical to women. We know that because we've done a lot of market research in this area. And so what tends to happen is if you have dry mouth, you tend to consume more liquids, more water. And if you consume more water and more liquids and you have, for example, an overactive bladder, that may make you want to go, go, go more. So sometimes there's a bit of a cyclical nature to this. If you have pelvic floor weakening caused by stress incontinence, most of these products are not going to help you. And so there's a different intervention that is involved similarly with mixed incontinence. They may or may not work. There are also some devices that have come to the market. I won't mention any devices by name, but there are various devices that can help with supporting the pelvic floor. Questionable efficacy in that area. And then there's pelvic floor PT, which is the subject of our conversation today. And I do want Alexandra to address how pelvic floor physical therapy may be an intervention that you want to consider.
So, yeah, so kind of going through, you know, some of the things that you talked about, for stress incontinence, you know, there are really no medications directed specifically at that type of incontinence because it's such a mechanical thing. You know, the continence mechanism, which the pelvic floor muscles are a piece of, but has a lot to do with like how your urethra moves. Again, that's why following childbirth, we see this pretty commonly because there's more urethral mobility typically during that time. The pelvic floor muscles being weak or tight can play a role in how the continence mechanism is maintained. So I guess starting with stress incontinence, you know, it really in women, I would say between ages, I'll just say like 30 and 50 who are having that specific symptom, you know, go talk to your doctor and depending on where people are listening from, like at some point to go to physical therapy, you need, you know, kind of a referral or like something from your doctor saying that you can continue going. So you're going to have to talk to your doctor about this at one point. But again, if you only have those symptoms of stress incontinence, it's really not likely that medication is going to significantly help. Now, pelvic floor PT is a great treatment option for this kind of diagnosis. Again, we have, so you have that pressure. So that's a component of, you know, a big component of this diagnosis. So you have that pressure coming down, you know, when you cough or sneeze, the pressure comes downward. The abdominal contents kind of come down. Your pelvic floor muscles have to stretch and then kind of from their strength, like recoil to be able to support all of the pelvic organs and prevent incontinence. So you can see how if you even have, and this is getting into some pelvic floor diagnoses, but if you even have too much weakness of the pelvic floor, there could be a problem with that mechanism. Too much tightness of the pelvic floor, there can also be a difficulty with that. And then as well as just like the muscles not doing the right thing at the right time. That's what we call coordination dysfunction. So we have, you know, kind of a variety of things that can be going on with the pelvic floor that isn't super specific to any one like age group or diagnosis. Even I feel like especially with stress incontinence, there's usually a pretty mixed bag of like what can be going on with the pelvic floor to cause that.
So if as a pelvic PT, if I were to come to you and I were to share with you that I already had the diagnosis of stress incontinence. So I guess there are two types of situations. One, or actually there are multiple situations, but there could be the occasion where I come to you and I've already had the diagnosis of stress incontinence. There's really not much that can be done for me. Somebody, a doctor says, well, perform Kegels, right? Mm-hmm. And I don't think any woman really knows 100% how to perform a Kegel exercise. We've all, you know, those of us that have had children probably were taught to do this after we gave birth. But if you haven't had a child, maybe you never had these instructions. Either way, it's confusing. The second scenario is a woman comes in. I come into you and I know I'm wetting my pants a lot. I can't, you know, I cough, I sneeze, and I've wet my pants. By the way, I didn't do that when I coughed before. I did not wet my pants. Just FYI. But that's the second, that would be the second scenario. So let's talk about both, in both scenarios. Are you able to make a diagnosis, if a person comes in and says, this is what's going on, and how do you approach that then? So what is the way in which you intervene to help that woman?
So Those three kind of, I know we just talked about the three like incontinence diagnoses, but the three diagnoses that I'm making from my exam or whatever are the pelvic floor diagnoses. So like, yes, you know, you come in and you tell me your symptoms and I say, okay, that's like, that's mixed incontinence because you're having some of both, or that's stress incontinence because you're having some of both. But really what I want to get down to is like, why is this happening? Right. And that's where the pelvic floor diagnosis comes in. So it's like, okay, if you come in and you've been told that there's nothing you can do and you're doing Kegels, well, let's look at your pelvic floor. And maybe you actually shouldn't be doing Kegels. Maybe you don't know how to properly like breathe and relax and elongate your pelvic floor muscles. And that's actually why this is happening. And I think that's so common, and that's so hard for people to kind of wrap their head around, because we've been told for years, like you said, not that we really, I feel like not that a lot of people really know what a Kegel is, but it's just like, oh, you have to Kegel. And that's really, again, not always the case. You know, if you assess a pelvic floor and, you know, someone can get a good Kegel, even if they're not certain what it is, but they're like Kegeling like super quick and they're not relaxing in between each one, that's not really what we want either. So I think that always getting like an individualized kind of assessment, so you can get an accurate pelvic floor diagnosis, because you know your doctor can probably tell you, again, just based on what you're saying, which type of incontinence that is. But I don't think anyone's telling you like, oh, your pelvic floor is tight or weak or coordination is a problem. So
this is where a pelvic floor PT will come in. So even if you've been to, I assume that if you've been to a urogynecologist, the urogynecologist is able to make a diagnosis based upon your symptoms and an examination, but then it's really the intervention, and that's really where pelvic PT comes into play, because you're able to not only take the information, but also to help with manipulation. So tell us about the procedures that you would undertake, because some of those procedures are coaching, right? And others, I would assume, are more intervention and more invasive procedures. So I want our audience to understand that this is not just, you know, you're counseling and we're doing this, we could be doing it like we are on a, you know, a Zoom, but it could also be in person where you're teaching someone by manipulation.
Yeah, so the kind of, and again, I'll talk a little bit about what I do now, because I do most of this over Zoom, and there are ways to do that. And, you know, I can kind of talk about some of the considerations there. But your typical, like, go into a pelvic floor physical therapist office, you know, what that looks like is you go in and this is always the big, like, shock at the, like, sometime around the middle of the visit after you've talked to the person and you get their symptoms and everything. And then it's like, and then we're going to do an internal exam. And they're just like, what? Like, I thought this was physical therapy. So the kind of gold standard pelvic floor assessment is a digital pelvic floor exam. So this is, yes, it's a pelvic exam. It's not a speculum exam like a gynecologist. Typically what we have people do, as long as you're comfortable with this, is, you know, you're in a private room. So you undress from the waist down, you know, typically there's like a sheet or a gown that you can, you know, kind of drape yourself with. And after, you know, we've done just like a general screen of your hips and your pelvis and just like kind of some more basic screening there, we'll go into the specific pelvic floor examination. So, you know, typically what I do is I just like, you know, kind of feel the muscles on the inner thighs and everything that's kind of surrounding the pelvic floor. and then what we'll go into is looking at the coordination of some of those pelvic floor motions that we sort of alluded to earlier. But basically, I'm visually observing externally before there's any like hands-on anything, is can this person do a Kegel? Can they relax fully to like resting baseline, what happens when they cough, and can they do an appropriate bear down? So that's kind of the visual observation. Then we would go into the internal portion, which is again, just a digital exam. So just a one finger exam, inserted vaginally. And we're then palpating the pelvic floor muscles for any tightness or tenderness or, just any sensation that, you know, we're constantly talking to the patient then, like, what do you feel here? So if you're like immediately, this is something I see a lot in people with overactive bladder. If I push on your pelvic floor muscles and you immediately feel like I have to pee like 10 out of 10, that's not really normal. So we're, you know, that gives us information as well. And then I'm feeling for those same motions, you know, just from all of the pelvic floor layers. So there's different kind of layers of the pelvic floor. Externally, we have the muscles that are like, you know, more opening and closing the urethra, the vaginal opening, anal sphincter, and then deeper in, we have the more supportive light muscle layers that are giving support to all the organs, the bowel, the bladder, the uterus. So we want to get an idea of, are all those things working together the way that they should? Is the timing happening appropriately? So yeah, that's kind of what the standard like in-person assessment looks like.
And so let's talk about the virtual, the way in which you operate virtually, because you do a lot of this virtually.
Yes.
And when I first learned this, I thought, well, that's kind of interesting. I know during the pandemic, we talked to a number of gynecologists. And one of the things that they would offer to their patients was, you know, go into a bathroom where you have some privacy, lock the door, have kids or parents running around, what have you, and take a mirror. And that therein was the way in which they would operate. And if something was really serious, then there were exceptions that had to be made so that you could take care of the problem. But for the most part, they were done virtually, which is a huge change in the way all of us operated, right?
Yes,
so tell us absolutely. About how you operate virtually.
So, right. And this all came from COVID, right? That everyone started with COVID. And, you know, over the years in the, you know, in the patients that I've seen, there are a couple things that come up with that internal exam, right? Number one, some people are just flat out not comfortable doing that. And that's fine. Like, it's number one, like, you probably don't go into it because, again, the doctor doesn't always really explain what's happening in pelvic floor PT. So number one, people are just uncomfortable with it for whatever reason, and that's fine. You know, through my additional like certification that I did through ASEC to become a sex counselor, I started seeing more patients with sexual trauma, and the internal exam obviously becomes a problem then. And we're, you know, we're creating safe spaces for our patients. So we don't want to put someone through something that's going to be additionally, you know, traumatic. And then there's just like people who can't come in for whatever reason, you know what I mean? So then here we are in COVID and we have this virtual thing that we have to be doing. And then some time goes on and people start coming back to in-person visits, but there's really this like continued desire, not from everyone, but from a lot of people for virtual. So your mirror thing is not the mirror example you just used is part of what I tell people to do. So the way that I assess people's pelvic floor in a virtual session, number one is I'm usually doing this multiple times and in multiple different ways. So the first thing I have them do is I sit here and I'm like, okay, I want you to just do a Kegel, whatever that feels like for you. And number one, if their head starts bobbing up and down, like I can tell that they're not, you know, isolating their pelvic floor. So we talk a little bit about that, but I have them go through those four motions, kind of like just sitting over a Zoom. And obviously I'm not visualizing anything like perineum or pelvic floor wise while they're doing this, but through breathing strategies and, you know, compensatory strategies, I can kind of get a sense of what's going on. And then I tell them, okay, go take your mirror, just like you said, lay down, and I want you to tell me what you see. And Origin has this really nice kind of like worksheet, like this self, it put your finger inside your vagina, and I just want you to squeeze and tell me what you feel. If it hurts a little bit, you know, that's, again, something that we're talking about. If you feel like a lot more at the top of your finger versus the bottom of your finger, well, maybe you're not coordinating your muscles the right way. And if you're squeezing everything at the top and creating all this pressure, and then your like sphincter muscles on the outside aren't doing anything, you know, that can be why leaking happens. Sometimes, a lot of times, because pelvic organ prolapse is a pretty common, I know we're not talking specifically about it here, but it's a pretty common finding, even if people don't have any symptoms of it. But we talk about how, you know, just change in position of the organs following childbirth, or like maybe this person's tends to be constipated, like how that impacts everything. So, and then we come back and talk about it. And, you know, I find that people are really, really motivated to do these things themselves when they just know what to do. So that's been really cool with virtual, is like, if you're signing up for this, you have to be pretty self-motivated, but people are really self-motivated and really want to understand like how to kind of be on top of this stuff themselves.
And that's part of the way in which we solve these problems. So otherwise we're, you know, sadly, we're wearing paper products, whether it's right. A pad or a diaper, and there's no woman or man for that matter that wants to grow up that has an aspirational goal to wear a diaper, adult right. diaper. Unfortunately, it's a reality for many adults for a variety of reasons, and no judgment, but if there is a better way, and certainly pelvic PT is one of those better ways to approach this. And again, we talk about pharmacology, and in some of these situations, it's not an option, right? It doesn't have an impact. And I think we describe the stress incontinence. How does it, is there anything that can be done with respect to, let's say, urge and or mixed? So do these same techniques work in urge and mixed?
Yeah, so I would... Truthfully, if someone's primary complaint is like urgency, rushing to the bathroom, frequency for that matter as well, I would go through this exact same process with them. But I would actually probably prioritize what's called bladder training, like before getting to this. And again, I would do bladder training in someone with stress incontinence too. It just depends on what their primary complaint is. But so bladder training is this other component where I tell people it sounds really simple, but it can be really impactful. And kind of the cool thing about this is that, you know, like any other training, you know, pelvic floor training takes time and you have to like do the exercises and things like that. But bladder training really can happen pretty quickly if you're diligent about it. So what bladder training is you are, you know, so I would tell people to do what's called a bladder diary or like a bladder journal. So this is like for 2 to 3 days, you know, write down what you're drinking, how often you're going, any leaking that's happening, how long it's taking you to empty your bladder. And that's like some really great objective information. Again, that's exactly the same as what you would do in person. Sometimes even the urogynes do have you, or urologists do have you do that. So we take a look at that and then we say, okay, you are going like 8 times between the hours of like 9 and 11 a.m., right? And maybe you're drinking a lot of coffee within that time. And we talk about bladder irritants and things that irritate your bladder. And then maybe between the hours of like 1 and 5, you're only going 1 to 2 times. You know, so we say your bladder doesn't like to, you know, have all that irregularity and how often you're going. Really are, you know, we're talking about bladder norms. Our bladder likes to empty once every 2 to 3 hours, you know, 5 to 8 times a day. So if we're, you know, way above or way below that, our bladder doesn't really like that. And that can cause urgency. Dehydration can cause urgency, which is something, again, a little bit counterintuitive, but the less that you drink, the more concentrated your urine gets, the more that can cause urgency, just like drinking coffee or soda, or even like are, you know, listen, I love Pellegrino, but like even carbonated non-caloric water is going to irritate your bladder more than just water is. So that's a big one. I hate to take everyone's Pellegrino away from them, but yeah, just learning how to manage that. So that bladder training. And again, once you just sort of implement some of those, like, you know, I tell people on your watch or your Apple Watch or whatever, just set a running timer for like 2 hours, or sometimes we have to start with like an hour and a half. And it's like, can I get there? Like, but a lot of times people can, and they're surprised that that makes such a difference in the urgency, and just knowing some of these strategies make a really big difference.
So behavior modification, we heard you share with us that yes, drinking water is a good thing. And we are told that we should be consuming more water. We need that hydration, but drinking other beverages that are dehydrating, like coffee, which could also be an irritant. And sadly, carbonated beverages like Pellegrino. Sorry, ladies. I love Pellegrino as well. So I'll remember that. Could also be the culprits in terms of not supporting you in your journey to try to resolve these issues. And then that pertains to both the urge incontinence as well as mixed. And it could also contribute or could help with the stress incontinence as well. Stress, more a mechanical issue. I believe that's what we heard. So these are some great tips. I know we've covered a lot of territory. There is certainly more. So when we think about incontinence per se, or bladder issues, we can't ignore bowel issues. I'm not sure we can tackle that today, but that's for another episode, because it's something that we don't talk about. So this is either fecal incontinence, which is unfortunately leaking from the rectum, and it's also constipation. So these are issues that also play into our pelvic health. And they're topics that we need to be discussing, even if they are uncomfortable topics. That's the whole purpose of the Love Mia Vita podcast. We want to be discussing topics that we know are of interest and are needed for both men and women. This is primarily for women and women's health. But oftentimes these topics get ignored until we end up at the HCP's office. And by the way, on that note, we want all of you listening to this podcast to understand that none of this information replaces what you may receive from your healthcare practitioner. So this is information only. It's not meant to diagnose or treat any of these conditions, but it really is to inspire you to pursue further investigation with your healthcare practitioner and with a pelvic PT. So this is Jerry DiPiano with the Love Mia Vita podcast, and my guest today, Dr. Alexandra Bertucci. We are signing off. We hope that this information inspires you to do something about the need to go, 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 and that we have imparted some knowledge that may help you to consider pelvic PT as an option if you are experiencing some of the symptoms that we just discussed during this podcast. I am signing off. I wish all of you well. And Dr. Bertucci, thank you so much for your time. And remember, folks, to love Mia Vita.